This is Avery Bradley of the Boston Celtics. You're listening to ELNS Radio.
This is Luke Harrigan, and you're listening to
Boston fans, this is what you've been waiting for.
Thomas, in the paint, tries to spin it up and down.
It's Celtics coverage on CLNSradio.com.
Into Crowder, takes it.
So what are you waiting for? Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll-free, 347-215-7771.
Put up it in! Marcus Smart at the buzzer!
Fourteen in a row at home for the Boston Celtics. Welcome into CLNS Radio's post-game coverage of tonight's game between the Celtics and the Memphis Grizzlies. Tonight, as I said, the Celtics extend a winning streak at home to 14 games with a victory over old friend Tony Allen and the Grizz by a score of 116-96. I am your host, Sean Backe. Joining me tonight will be Timothy Scaflani, so make sure you get in queue with us when we open up the SeatGeek toll-free call lines in a little while as well, 347-215-7771. And don't forget, CLNS Radio's leading online coverage of the Boston Celtics is now even more comprehensive than ever. From the Celtics postgame show to the Garden Report and to Celtics Beat, CLNS Radio will now provide basketball fans game day coverage before anyone else leading up to tip-off. The all-new Boston Celtics pregame show with LHR will be released on clnsradio.com on game day at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, making it the first pregame show to air anywhere. Download the CLNS Radio mobile app today so you don't miss a show. And don't forget that the pregame show from today's game against the Memphis Grizzlies is up on clnsradio.com and on the CLNS Radio mobile app. LHR had a GM from the Memphis Grizzlies, Chris Wallace, on today, so you definitely want to catch that. Wallace has been on Celtics Beat a number of times and definitely a must-listen over there. So check out the CLNS Radio mobile app today on iTunes as well as Google Play, and, of course, at clnsradio.com as well. So I'll bring in my co-host for the evening, Timmy Scaflani. Timmy, the Celtics, they got off to kind of a rocky start in this one, but really turned it on in the third quarter, outscoring the Memphis Grizzlies 31-12 and really put the game away with their defense. And, you know, it was Geno time in the fourth quarter, which we love to see, which means we see guys like Jordan Mickey and R.J. Hunter out there, Terry Rozier. What are your thoughts on this one initially as the game wrapped up about 25 minutes ago or so?
Well, hello, Sean.
Jimmy?
I think, you know, despite a very rough first half where the Celtics were out-rebounded 2-1 by the Memphis Grizzlies, even despite the fact that the Grizzlies were missing their two starting big bodies, I think the Celtics were able to win this not only with their defense, which has won them plenty of games this year, but also, I mean, their shot selection and their shooting percentage was excellent tonight, well above averages both. Shooting 47% from the floor, where they normally shoot 44% in a normal game, and 47% from three, as opposed to a 33% season average. So really impressive shooting from just about everyone on the team. There might be a few exceptions that we can get into later. And, you know, anytime when you have the whole seven players on the team in double-digit scoring, you know that the ball was moving and they were hitting their shots tonight. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, no, the Celtics are definitely a team that live by the three and die by the three, and they were living by it tonight. 15-32, like you said, 47 points. But, you know, really the third quarter is where they took this game over, outscored the Grizzlies 31-12. They were getting that timely scoring. I agree with you. I do think they were taking, taking shots, good shots, and they weren't turning the ball over. So, you know, Memphis got off to a hot start. Obviously, old friend Tony Allen, as I alluded to, coming back, and he had a great game. But the injury bug has stuck the Memphis Grizzlies pretty good. Even before this game started, you know, you had Zach Randolph out. You had Conley out, Mike Conley. You know, obviously Marc Gasol is out for the rest of the season. So, you know, Memphis struggled, especially when Mario Chalmers went down. So they were hanging around this game, but it seemed like as soon as Mario Chalmers went out, they really were not themselves. So the Celtics definitely took advantage of that and, you know, overcame that that first half rebounding discrepancy to really have a key victory for their 14th straight win at the TD Garden tonight. We will have Jared Weiss calling in from the TD Garden with the grandstand locker room report. We'll try and get an update if there are any on Mario Chalmers. You know, if you could read lips, you heard him say that he felt something pop or that the knee popped out or something popped out. Mike and Tommy kind of alluded to it later on that it might have been an Achilles or something like that. It may not have been as bad as originally thought, but we'll see if we can get an update from Jared Weiss. And obviously, we want to talk about Jared Sullinger a little bit as well, as he was hospitalized earlier this week with a skin infection, but seemed to be all right once he got out there tonight in his 21 minutes. So, again, get in queue when we open up the SeatGeek toll-free call lines. That's 347-215-7771. Of course, we have some folks in queue already. Make sure you press the number 1 if you'd like to come on the air with Timmy and myself as we continue to break this one down tonight. And the Celtics win this one by a score of 116-96. Leading scorer for the Celtics, not a surprise, Isaiah Thomas. Another pretty good game from him. 7 of 18 shooting. He had a couple of threes, a couple of big threes when they were starting to pull away. Also contributed with 5 assists. But the Celtics, I mean, like you alluded to, they had 7 players in double figures, and they got some great bench production tonight from guys like Evan Turner with his 16 points, 4 rebounds, 8 assists on 6 of 10 shooting in his 30 minutes tonight. You know, Marcus Smart, 10 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists on 4 of 9 shooting for his 28 minutes. And even guys like Tyler Zeller, again, you know, I tell you, for a big, tall guy, he sure is a little bit, you know, athletic. He can get up and down the floor. And I thought that one pick-and-roll play that he had with Avery Bradley, where I believe it was Vince Carter tried to change a shot. You know, he was pretty athletic to be able to maneuver around that to get the layup and the foul as well. So good contributions from Zeller tonight, 9 points and 7 rebounds in his 26 minutes. So let's not forget about the Swedish Larry Bird, Timmy. 11 points in his 23 minutes, also had 5 rebounds. So they were getting contributions from everywhere. I mean, the starters, you had 4 out of 5 of the starters in double figures. Amir Johnson was the only one. He struggled tonight, only with 3 points and 2 rebounds and 2 assists in his 18 minutes. But with guys like Zeller and Sullinger and Jerebko even contributing the way they did in their 20-plus minutes, you know, Amir Johnson didn't, you know, his contribution would have been nice, but it wasn't as needed tonight, which was kind of a good thing. What do you think, Timmy?
Well, regarding Amir Johnson, and I think this is something that we can break down further later too, but I thought he was awful tonight. I mean, I'm surprised he even played 17 minutes with the way he was playing. His sole meaningful contribution, in my opinion, was I thought he kind of sparked that third quarter run that the Celtics went on when Isaiah Thomas got put in a position to take a jump ball. And mm-hmm. Amir Johnson, Stonehands Amir Johnson, made a nice play to strip whoever received it for the Grizzlies, and he laid it in. And I thought that set the defensive tone for the Celtics in the third quarter. But I just want to give the credit that's due to Jonas Jerebko. I mean, you definitely mentioned that he – among other people, had a good game. But I thought two things about Jerebko. One, I think he played his role perfectly tonight. Mm-hmm. He wasn't a liability on defense. He did have 4 fouls, but you know, he got rebounds when they came to him. He had 1 steal. He had one really good sequence in the second quarter that I think kept us in a game. It kept us in the game in some ways, where I think he knocked down a 3, then he came down the other end and got a block, and then he went down and got a steal again. And when I say that he played his role perfectly, I'm referring to he only took 4 shots tonight, all 4 of them from outside of the perimeter, and he knocked 3 of them down. So he wasn't taking ill-advised shots. He shot when he was open, and unlike some other nights, he actually hit the shots. and he was a team high plus 22. So I thought Jurepko was really important for us tonight, and I don't say that often.
Yeah, I mean, these role guys, these role players, I mean, obviously a guy like Kelly Olynyk, who, you know, they talked about perhaps him coming back tonight from his shoulder injury, but not quite ready yet. So we may see him later this week, perhaps. But guys like him and Jurepko, and even Zeller to a certain extent, although he was kind of out of the rotation for a while there, and it's just now getting back in and getting some significant minutes and contributing. But this is the kind of contribution you need when you're trying to make a significant playoff run, right? I mean, you know, we start with Crowder, you know, I think in the last year, even, you know, even though they went to the first round and got knocked out, I mean, you know, we sort of saw the emergence of Jay Crowder towards the end of last season and into that one playoff round that the Celtics did make it through, or make it to, rather, before getting knocked out. But, you know, now with him in the starting lineup, you're going to need that contribution. So you have Evan Turner coming off the bench. He gets 16 points in 30 minutes. You know, Marcus Smart, you know, the stat line doesn't really jump out at you, but he's doing those intangible things on defense and taking charges and, you know, creating contact to get to the free throw line. You know, obviously just kind of wreaking havoc on the defensive end and disrupting guys' shots. Those are all the things that you need from your role players, and you know, that's what the Celtics are getting right now. So, you know, the fact that you have 4 out of 5 starters in double figures, and then you have 3 bench guys, you know, 3 role players that are in double figures, and Zeller 1 point away from that. You know, that's a good night for the Celtics, and for them to score 116 points in this game, great stuff for them. But yeah, I mean, Jurepko, he's one of those guys, kind of an afterthought in that trade last year. But he has this perfect role carved out for him. There's some nights when he struggles, particularly in the defensive end, like you said. But on nights like this, where he's very selective on where he shoots, he's shooting wide open 3-pointers. He's knocking them down. He gets his hand in the passing lane. He kind of knows where to be on defense for the most part. Sometimes his, you know, footwork might elude him a little bit. But this is the kind of contribution that this team needs as they're going down the stretch here to try and lock up that third seed. Or, you know, try and move up, even though, you know, it might be a little tough with Toronto in front of them by a few games. But I love what I've been seeing out of this team lately, because it's not always the same guy. Tonight, you know, Jurepko had good contributions. You know, Turner's been pretty consistent. Zeller is popping in every once in a while. When Olynyk was out there, he was getting pretty consistent before the injury. So, you know, you're going to need these guys. And then you got some experience for the young guys tonight. You know, even though it was the last couple minutes, you still get a little bit of experience for these guys, because one injury and one of these guys is going to have to step up, whether it's Mickey or Hunter or Young or Rozier. If there's an injury to any of the key rotation, those guys are going to have to be ready to step up. And so good to get them some minutes tonight, too. What do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, I was at the Portland game last week where the rookies got about 2 or 3 minutes each. And I was excited to see them come in, and they just put on an awful show. I mean, Terry Rozier chucked up, I think, 7 shots in about 2 minutes. I think RJ shot a couple of bricks. And then, I mean, tonight was almost the exact opposite. I mean, they came out and hustled. Terry Rozier held on to the ball and actually got himself an assist and 2 rebounds while he was out there. And then,
yeah,
obviously, everyone had their – Yeah, in just 2 minutes. And obviously everyone had their eyes on the glorious triple block by Jordan Mickey that led to the RJ Hunter's 3 on the other side. That's exactly what you want to see when the rookies come out for 2 minutes.
Well, I was at the Utah game last Monday, and Jordan Mickey got some pretty significant minutes in that game. It wasn't crazy or anything like that, but he was effective when he was out there, and he had a key block in that game. And they actually needed him with the size that Utah has in the front court, obviously. You know, a team like Memphis with Randolph and with Gasol out, you don't necessarily need Mickey to play significant minutes. You know, you can get away with playing Amir Johnson or Zeller or even, you know, Sullinger at the 5 if you're going to go really small. But, you know, just getting him that experience, I think, is going to be key. Especially once we get, you know, I mean, we have just a little over a month left in the season. So there's going to be some some, you know, important games that they're going to be playing. And there may be a need here if somebody gets dinged up and is out a game or two, or, you know, perish the thought, but out for the rest of the season for, you know, whatever reason. You know, getting these guys some experience, even 2 minutes tonight, is a little bit. But, you know, obviously Avery Bradley hit some big threes. You know, Isaiah Thomas, obviously, like I said, led the team 22 points, as he has been recently. It's been great stuff. So, again, 347-215-7771 is a call-in number for the SeatGeek toll-free call lines. We'll be opening up them up very soon. But don't forget that today's podcast is powered by Audible.com. Audible.com is a leading provider of audiobooks with more than 180,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. Audiobooks are great to listen to when you're driving, running errands, at the gym, or simply at home relaxing. So for our audience members, Audible is offering a free 30-day trial. Just go to audiblepodcast.com/Celtics and browse over 180,000 audio programs. You can download a title free and start listening. It's that easy. One audiobook you should definitely consider, and one that I have done myself, our frequent CLNS radio guest and sports beat legend, Bob Ryan, his book Scribe. You can get a free 30-day trial at audiblepodcast.com/Celtics and download Scribe, narrated by Bob Ryan himself. So all you need to do is go to audiblepodcast.com/Celtics and start your free trial today. I downloaded Bob Ryan's book last summer and listened to it on my rides to work. And the fact that he actually narrated himself made it that much better. But great book if anybody hasn't read it. Timmy, is that a book that you've read? Have you read Bob Ryan's book?
I cannot say that I have. I have slacked on my audiobooks significantly.
Well,
even
if you get an imprint copy, it's a great read. So get it on your list if you don't have it there.
All right, Bob Ryan. Well, I'm sorry. What did you say the title was?
Scribe.
Scribe. It is now on my list, Sean.
Very
good.
Got
it.
All right, excellent. So, yeah, why don't we do this? The SeatGeek toll-free call lines at 347-215-7771. Getting queued now so you can talk about tonight's game and give us your analysis. We're going to go down to Tampa, Florida, with Nick Sesento, who's going to let us know what he thought about tonight's game. Nick, what's going on, my friend?
Sean, Tim, how y'all doing?
Good, good.
How's it going?
Tale of two halves in this game. I mean, I think that there wasn't anybody watching that wasn't frustrated with the way we played that first half, although it's always interesting to listen to the ESPN broadcast as opposed to Tommy and Mike, because as with the tale of two halves and the play on the court, you could hear the ESPN commentators and quote-unquote analysts kind of shifting their focus and their favorite as the game shifted. They kind of changed their talk of, you know, oh, how bad these Celtics are. They can't get an offensive rebound. What's going on here? They're just coming out cold. And then as we start, after Mario Chalmers goes down and we start winning, they start changing their tune. Oh, you can see how they're, you know, one of the top three teams in the East. And, you know, is it possible they might catch up with Toronto? So they're just, ESPN is always funny to me. I can't stand listening to them, but, you know, for a change up sometimes from Tommy and Mike, who are so dyed-in-the-wool Celtics, you know, you get a little bit of a different perspective. Not the ESPN perspective is all that fantastic, but a couple of observations. One thing, I'm gonna walk back a criticism I've made of a player in the past a couple of times on the show, and that's Avery Bradley. While I'd still like to see more than, I think, 15 points in a team-high 36 minutes out of Avery Bradley, I have noticed in recent games, especially going back to Cleveland, where he put the moves on LeBron James and totally shook LeBron James out of his shoes to hit a jump shot, that Avery Bradley has actually improved his ball handling and his dribbling significantly in recent games, almost as if he's been listening to my criticism of me saying repeatedly he has no dribble, he has no handles. Today I think I've seen him drive into the hoop twice. There's one real nice baseline drive where he kept his man right on his hip, took it to the baseline, and I think finished with his with his left hand. I'm not sure how, what the finish, but he actually finished clean right off the backboard the way he should. Excellent handles from Avery Bradley. Definitely like to see that. Another great play, and I know that the last show, I think, was covered by Matt Rury and Bobby Manning. Bobby Manning, who writes for the Celtics blog, but also does shows for you guys at CLNS Radio. And Bobby Manning just recently wrote an article about Evan Turner and how the Celtics would be better served letting Evan Turner walk in free agency, because he's most likely, with the cap expansion, the cap increase, going to command something like $10 to $12 million per year. I don't see how, after the stretch of games that Evan Turner has had recently, where he's come through in very important, you know, points of this game. After, I think, obviously, Mario Chalmers going down was the turning point in this game, where Memphis really just lost, you know, their spirit and lost their heart. But when you look at, you know, the players that, you know, really contributed to blowing the game open, I think Evan Turner was one of them. And I think Evan Turner repeatedly comes in and keeps that second unit, and if you look at the plus minus on the second unit, it's consistently better, you know, on a per player basis than the plus minus of the starting lineup. I mean, if you look at what Jerebko, you mentioned Jerebko's plus minus, I think it was, what, plus 22. Everybody on that second unit that plays with Turner has had an incredible plus minus tonight. There was plus 14 for Turner. I'm looking at the stats. Plus 17 for Smart, plus 18 for Zeller, plus 22 for Jerebko. And Avery Bradley is usually one of the guys that overlaps, and sometimes Isaiah Thomas. I think one of the beautiful things about tonight was you're able to see Evan Turner and Isaiah Thomas play well together. I think Isaiah Thomas is proving to be effective off the ball as well as on the ball. Evan Turner will never be an effective off-the-ball player, but if Isaiah Thomas can play well off the ball and Avery Bradley is suddenly now creating shots for himself off the dribble and then driving to the hole, I mean, this is a whole new dynamic for the team. Amir Johnson, boy, this is robbery almost that we're paying him $12 million a year. I really hope we don't pick up that option next year, because I think as you guys have gone over it on the show multiple times, that he was the last of the high school players to get drafted. And I believe he was drafted in, what was it, 2006 or something like that, as an 18-year-old or whatever it is. And here we are, whatever it is, how many seasons later, and his body is just not keeping up with it. And I think you can see that his production and what his, even his activity, his engagement in the game is high when he starts the game, and then it wanes, and then when he comes out of halftime, he has a little bit of productivity, and then he disappears for the rest of the game. Matt Rury on the last show presented the idea that maybe the plantar fasciitis that he has, you know, he gets treatment before the game, gets treatment in the locker room at halftime, he's able to play those, you know, those short, you know, brief spurts that he gets. But his production has gone down, and so has his minutes, in favor of, not just because Olynyk has been out, but also because Zeller has been coming on and is a more viable option. I mean, there's not even a question. You look at Zeller, he's played better than Johnson. And one last thing, just to speak to that same, you know, tone of the big men, Jordan Mickey. I don't understand why people are so averse to giving Jordan Mickey some minutes, when out of the rookies that we have, Jordan Mickey, and he fills a need that we have, which is, you know, defense in the paint. Jordan Mickey seems to be the one that doesn't force his game the way that Terry Rozier seems to force his game, that doesn't seem lost the way that R.J. Hunter sometimes seems lost. And if you look at his total minutes, he's played 27 minutes this season in 10 games, spread over 10 games. But in all of those games except for two, where he only played a minute and a half and a minute and three quarters, was he shut out completely statistically. In all of those other games, he gave us either multiple points, multiple rebounds, or multiple blocks, like, as for example, the game tonight. I think it's time. There's nothing else Jordan Mickey can do in the D-League. He's already proven what you can prove in the D-League. The only other thing he can do is get experience here. And like you mentioned earlier, one injury, especially to what now seems to be a fairly thin front court, a small front court. Amir Johnson doesn't seem to have very much left in the tank. Kelly Olynyk might be coming back soon, but maybe it's time to start squeezing Mickey in a more consistent role. Short minutes, you know, to be sure, but, you know, as we get closer towards a thing like Bobby Manning did say, let's put all these pieces, you know, we should have the whole puzzle together by the time we go into the playoffs. And I think that Jordan Mickey could be not a needle mover. He's not going to change the whole face of the franchise, but I think he could add an extra element that, if used wisely at the right time, could give the Celtics one element that they desperately need, and that's defense in the paint.
Yeah, I'd certainly like to see him get more minutes than you know, maybe take some of the minutes that Amir Johnson is getting. Amir Johnson played 18 minutes tonight, 1 of 3, 3 points, you know, a couple rebounds, a couple assists. You give maybe, you know, 6, 7, 8 of those minutes to Jordan Mickey and let him go nuts and make some blocks and everything like that. But I have to agree with you there. And we'll let you go next, because we have some other callers coming up here. But we'll review your points here as we continue on the show. But as always, appreciate the support and look forward to you on the show again very soon.
Appreciate it. Good show.
All right, thanks. Nick Sesento down in Tampa. So Timmy, a couple of points that he made that we'll go back to, and we could talk about the Jordan Mickey thing in a little bit more depth, because I know you had mentioned it earlier in the show as well. But going back to Evan Turner to start here, you know, Evan Turner has, been a player, you know, coming out of Ohio State, played with the Sixers, used to torch the Celtics. There was a playoff series a few years ago where, he played very well against the Celtics. Went to Indiana, didn't really have the same role and kind of got lost in purgatory out there, but comes back with the Celtics. He's had some really bright spots, maybe some inconsistencies, but, you know, he's carved out a decent role for himself. And, you know, when he's going to the paint and pulling up with that jumper that he has, that Tommy kind of calls his bread and butter, he's hitting those shots more often than not. And, he's going to the hoop. He's getting to the line. You know, he'll shoot an out, a three-pointer every once in a while as well. Talk about Evan Turner and what you think about what he's been bringing to the Celtics, especially recently.
Yeah, I mean, I know that's Nick's guy. And since
yeah,
the start of the season,
Nick's guy.
He would call in. He calls in after every game, and I don't think any call goes without mention of what Evan Turner did. And, I mean, that must have been harder for him at the start.
Good or bad. Yeah.
Evan Turner didn't look so good. He, at the time, was falling into a similar category with me as with Jerebko, as why is he even on the court right now? We need people who can play. This is a close game or we're losing. But, I mean, I will completely admit that I was wrong about him. Definitely since the All-Star break, but even for a stretch before that, I would say over the last 15 or 20 games, he has been – he's really been back to the form that I think he was in the second half of last year, where he's just stuffing the stat sheet every single night. He's giving you a nice contribution on the glass. He's getting a nice amount of assists, and he's getting his own points as well. I mean, 16 points tonight, and he's been playing just like that in this entire stretch since the All-Star break. So when it comes to whether he should stick around next year, I mean, personally – and I never would think that I would say this at the start of the year, but I think that he's worth keeping around for the alleged $10 to $12 million, especially under the new TV deal where the salary cap is going to be rising. I don't even think he's underappreciated anymore, but I think he's a really important guy, both in the locker room. I think he's somewhat of a leader. I wouldn't really know, but just based on what I see in various media that you see around the locker room and such. And, I mean, I wouldn't even call him a glue guy necessarily, because he's so crucial to that second unit. I mean, you mentioned, or rather Nick mentioned, he's the primary ball handler on the second unit, even tonight when he was playing with Isaiah Thomas. And Nick was right, that is a whole new dynamic when you see Isaiah Thomas playing off the ball. They even touched on that on the ESPN broadcast, saying if you can use Isaiah Thomas like a shooting guard, I mean, that is a whole new dynamic that the Celtics really haven't even experimented with yet to this point in the season.
Well, we do have a guy that probably can give us an idea of what Evan Turner's leadership skills look like in the locker room, and that's Jared Weiss. He'll be calling in a little while. from the TD Garden with the Grandstand Locker Room Report. So hang on to that question for when Jared is on with us, Timmy. I think he can get you the answer that you're looking for in that one.
Yeah.
I'll combine the other two of Nick's points here, you know, talking about obviously, you know, guys like Tyler Zeller and, you know, in Sullinger to some extent. You know, Tyler Zeller has been getting more minutes recently, and obviously Sullinger's been playing more consistently. You know, with Olenek out, there's you know, less of a log jam, if you will, at kind of that 4-5, or even, you know, some of the guys that are playing in that 3 role, you know, there's less of a log jam with a guy out. But I like what Tyler Zeller brings to the table. You know, if you look at his game overall, obviously, like I said, he must have been in the doghouse or something, because he was out of the rotation completely, had a bunch of DNP coaches' decisions for a while there. And, you know, for the most part, when he's been out there, he's been productive. The thing I like about him is that he hustles. He's running the floor. And if you can get a big guy, even if he's not big in size, but, you know, he's got the height, so he's playing, you know, that five position for the most part, you know, he's running the floor. So when guys are coming up the wing on transition and looking up for him, he's, you know, he's going to be there for an easy layup in transition on the fast break. He's got good hands. You saw in that pick and roll play with Avery Bradley that he had tonight. Bradley put it in a perfect spot, but he was right there to catch the pass. Good bounce pass from Bradley, and he was able to lay it in. Had to make a little bit of an adjustment for Vince Carter, like I said, who I believe it was, that was coming across to try and make the block. But, you know, and he also can hit the outside jumper. He's got that 15, 16 footer that he can hit consistently. He's got a good stroke. So, you know, you're going to need guys like that. We talked about it earlier. You're going to need guys like that. And if he's taking minutes away from Amir Johnson being out there, I have no problem with that. With Jordan Mickey, when he comes in, I have no problem with him taking 6, 7, 8 minutes to, you know, in a game like this. And, you know, especially when Memphis had the advantage on the boards, you know, they were taking advantage of the Celtics' lack of size. And, you know, if you bring in a guy like Jordan Mickey, you know, guys that were going to the hoop, Green was going to the hoop an awful lot. You know, obviously Chalmers, when he was in there, they were going to low post to the other guy there. I can't remember his name, but apparently he did only 2 points in the NBA before tonight's game.
You know what I'm talking about, Tim?
Martin.
Yeah,
so he was around the basket. So if you bring a guy in like Jordan Mickey, who's you know, kind of a rim presence, you know, maybe he changes some shots here and there, and you know, helps them a little bit before they have to really take over in the third quarter. You know, probably keeps it you know, or gives the Celtics an advantage in the first half rather than having to play catch up. But I would like to see more of that. I would like to see a less Amir Johnson. So I agree with Nick there. And more Jordan Mickey, not crazy minutes, you know, maybe 8 to 10 minutes a game, and get him some more NBA, you know, NBA experience, because he certainly plays within himself. Like Nick said, he doesn't, you know, he doesn't get too crazy. He doesn't play a different kind of game when he's out there than what he should. And, you know, obviously everything that seems to happen with him is positive when he's out there. So, what are your thoughts on Jordan Mickey, and obviously with Tyler Zeller in his role in this team, as opposed to guys like Amir Johnson, who are playing 18 minutes and really not being productive in a game tonight?
So, I mean, I'll try to keep this not too jumbled. I have a lot of thoughts on it. But, I mean, first of all, when it comes to Tyler Zeller, and you just touched upon this, but I think in addition to him hustling up and down the court, which is – amazing, and that is underappreciated. But the fact that even in the absence of Kelly Olynyk, where he's really flourished, I think it's partially because he does have that mid-range jump shot that he's really consistent with. So even though he's not pulling his defenders out to the perimeter, he's at least pulling them out of the paint, which makes some room for any guards to drive. So thinking about Tyler Zeller and then looking at Amir Johnson's numbers, and tonight specifically, and I've protected Amir Johnson mostly all season. I like him as a player, and he seems like he's been underperforming, and especially for the money. But if you look at his this season's averages, they're just ever so slightly below his career averages. So he's really playing to roughly how he's been all of his career.
Mm-hmm.
But just based on what he did tonight, I'm not advocating for Sullinger and Zeller as a starting backcourt or front court rather. But I mean, why shouldn't Amir Johnson's starting position be in jeopardy? It seems like, I mean, Sullinger and Olynyk flip-flopped a few times in the starting lineup this year with whoever was playing well, and Amir Johnson has not been playing well now for an extended period of time, and I don't know why mm-hmm. he shouldn't be in jeopardy of losing that starting spot.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, obviously the rotation's got a little bit tighter more recently as this team has gelled and started playing really well together. Obviously Olynyk's going to have to be, kind of work back into that rotation when he returns from injury. But I think I don't really put too much stock in who starts the game. It's who's, in there in the crucial minutes, especially when you're like in the third quarter, those are the crucial minutes of this game tonight. And we didn't see much of Amir Johnson during that time when they were, when they were taking over this game in the third quarter. So I put more stock in who's in that game. If you're in a close game in the second half or in the fourth quarter towards the end, if Amir Johnson's out there, then, certainly have much more problem with it. But I agree with you. He's got to be able to earn that starting role. There's status to that, right? So if he's not earning that status because he's struggling with his game, then Brad Stevens needs to take a hard look at that. And, guys like David Lee, was growing weeds at the end of the bench when he was with this team. Tyler Zeller was out for a while, as I alluded to. But Amir Johnson has consistently been in the rotation despite the struggles that he's had for the most part. There's been a couple of games here and there where you don't see much of him. But for the most part, this is his, sort of his role in the rotation, that 18 to 20 minutes. Whether he struggles or not, and that's, how he's gotten to be around his career averages is because he's getting the playing time, whether it's deserved or not. So my feeling is that he's not deserving it right now. So when Olynyk comes back, I think that's the time when you go to Amir Johnson and say, hey, here's what we're doing. You're struggling out there. We want you to get reps. If we have a chance to practice, keep working on it. But here's how we're going to move forward with this. Sullinger is going to be the starter. Olynyk is going to be first off the bench. You might get 6, 8, 10 minutes a game, but they're paying an awful lot of money for guys like that to struggle this much. And obviously it wasn't a crazy offseason signing that was blowing everyone out of the water, other than a little bit of the money. So I think Stevens really needs to take a hard look at that. And I think games like this tonight almost make that decision really easy for him. So I'd be interested to see in the next game how much time Amir Johnson gets, and if he does get any time, if he's able to kind of get out of the funk that he's been in. Because, if you do have a consistent Amir Johnson out there, he does have length. He can, block some shots. He's been a very good rebounder at times. So those are things that you're going to need. And he has a good veteran presence, right? I think he has the right attitude, from what I understand. And I know that Jared's had some pretty good conversations with him, in the locker room as well. But, I think the Amir Johnson experiment is nearing its end. I know a lot of people were calling for him to be cut before or around the time that David Lee was cut. But, with Olynyk coming back, if he's, near 100% or as close to 100% as he's going to get, I'd like to see the minutes diminished for Amir Johnson and give some of those that he would get to a guy like Jordan Mickey and see what he can do here.
Right. Yeah. And regarding Mickey getting some minutes, I mean, obviously he hasn't seen very much playing time. I think either you or Nick said he's played 27 minutes so far this year, but
yeah.
I think that the fact that Stevens inserted him in that Utah game in the second quarter shows that he's not totally objecting the idea of playing Mickey. He's going to use him tactfully and insert him when he needs to. And
yeah.
I mean, so he's played really well over the last 10 games, for example, when he's gotten the time. But I mean, at least since that Utah game when Mickey was used, the Celtics have played against relatively weak backcourts, meaning I mean, the Heat were without Chris Bosh, and then, you know, tonight it was a really thinned out front court, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there hasn't necessarily been a need, even though tonight it did end up being the front court that was killing us. I don't think. I mean, does my point make sense to you that I just don't feel like there's really been that much of a need for him since they were up against Gobert?
And I had said that earlier. You know, I mean, I was at that game. I loved that he was out there and making an impact in his short minutes, and it was early in the game. But Utah has a pretty dominant front court, with Gobert out there. And, so I think, you know, he is being tactful. He doesn't want to Stevens doesn't want to overwhelm him. With too much responsibility right now. So I would like to see him get more minutes before the end of the regular season if he needs to be counted on at any point for the rest of the year and into the playoffs. But I can agree with that. To me, I think, he's being very tactful with how he's using him and not putting him in situations where he's going to fail and kind of drain his confidence a little bit, because, you know, he's out there and it's positive right now. And, so I think his confidence is growing, but I think the guys on this, on the Comcast Sportsnet, broadcast, Mike and Tommy had said, he's, and I just completely lost my train of thought.
It happened to me too.
I hate when that happens. He's the type of player where I just remember what I was going to say. Out of any of the rookies that the Celtics have, like RJ Hunter and Terry Rozier, that he has, he's obviously proven himself more than those other guys had and allowed himself to be counted on a little bit. So we'll see what happens with Brad down the stretch. But, you know, getting back to my original point with Amir Johnson, I think it's time to make a decision on that. And if Jordan Mickey can get some more minutes because of it, all the better for it.
Right. I completely agree. But one fear that I have with Amir Johnson, whereas David Lee is a guy with obviously a really good NBA track record, and it was known that he was getting in shape, getting towards the trade deadline, he had a good feeling that he would be picked up by another team. And obviously Amir Johnson would be too, but I just worry that he would be upset with a cut in his minutes. I mean, he already only played 18 minutes tonight.
Yeah.
If the Celtics weren't going to pick up that option and he was going to need to look for a new contract, I think I know nothing about the guy's personality, but I feel like that would be a typical thing of an NBA player to not want to see their minutes cut in the month before they need to be looking for a new contract. Especially a guy his age. They're about 30 years old. He's 28.
Yeah. So he's still young.
He's been
in the league. You know, he's been in the league, 10 years? Came right out of high school. He seems like he's older, but still with his skill level kind of declining, as Nick alluded to earlier. I'm sure there's somebody out there that could use him. Right now he's not proving his worth to anyone, to any team. He needs to kind of go back to the drawing board a little bit and get himself right to become more consistent out there and, you know, earn those minutes, earn that starter, that starting badge and really help to contribute to this team. Because if he's out there and he's contributing, then, you know, obviously it's warranted and he's needed. There is a place for his role if he's playing it right. You know, we talked about earlier in the show, Jarebko playing his role the right way. Well, Amir Johnson isn't doing that right now. So I'd like to see, a little bit of shift in the minutes. And at this point, when you're pushing for the playoffs and you've got a guy that's not contributing, the last thing I'd be worried about is him, being worried about his minutes, because he's not earning them. You know, if you go to your day job tomorrow and you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing out there, your boss is going to come down on you and let you know about it, and you better get it right or you may not have a job the next day. So I think that's the mentality that maybe Amir Johnson, needs to have. And by all means, he could be that, kind of personality.
Yeah, no, I agree with that completely. I mean, and you're right. I mean, it's not our problem if Amir Johnson's upset that he's not getting as many minutes, if he's not putting up the numbers. And even outside of his offensive numbers, which were bad, like we've said it a few times, he was 1-for-3 tonight in 18 minutes. He scored 3 points. But I think the entire Celtics front court needs to check themselves for allowing Jamichael Green and Jarrell Martin to have the games that they did. I mean, those guys combined for 33 points together. They combined for almost 20 rebounds. And, I mean, most of that happened in the first half, too. If they continued at the pace that those two were at in the first half, it could have been really bad for the Celtics. So, I mean, I feel like Amir Johnson was sold kind of as a not a solution to our lack of rim protection, but at least a guy who could hold his own on defense. And I mean, in addition to his offense really not working tonight, the defense wasn't there at all either. And all the Celtics bigs were pretty much in foul trouble by the third quarter at least.
Yeah. Like, yeah, no, that's a good point.
Sullinger had 3 fouls. Crowder had 4 fouls. Jarebko had 4 fouls. Zeller had 3 fouls. So I don't know what the problem was, but they just didn't seem to be able to hang with Jamichael Green and Jarrell Martin tonight.
Well, we could talk more about that with our locker room reporter, Jared Weiss, as he'll bring us the Grandstand Celtics locker room report. Grandstand sports highlights from fans in the stands on the new sports app, Grandstand. You could share your own Celtics highlights and watch other fans' videos straight from the crowd. Download Grandstand on the App Store or at grandstand.me. Jared Weiss, welcome to CLNS Radio Celtics postgame show tonight. What's going on there down at the TD Garden?
It's nice to be here a little bit earlier than usual. Who would have thought a national game would have us out of here earlier?
Well, a 7 o'clock start in a national game, that usually helps. Most of those are at 8 o'clock or, you know, 7:30, so we're getting going a little bit late. But, yeah, good stuff. Jared, the first thing I wanted to talk about, obviously you had some great, pregame press conference coverage with Tony Allen, former Celtic, obviously talked a lot about, himself being a great defender, but also the Kobe Bryant stuff. And talk about your, the conversation that was had with Tony Allen prior to the game, and then we can get into breaking down this one.
Yeah, TA, it was great because I haven't talked to him in a few years, and I walk into the Memphis locker room to find him on his stomach on a training table getting a deep tissue calf massage with Vaseline and the works and everything. It was really, really weird scene. And he's surrounded at, like, waist level by, like, 4, like, you know, beat reporters that have been here for a long time. So I jumped in, and I got to talk to Tony a little bit about the injury that he had in 2007. It was January 10th, 2007. I'm sure a lot of people remember. Blew by Steven Jackson on a drive, got fouled, threw it down, came down with his foot turned sideways, and he ruptured pretty much his entire knee. It was a really brutal injury. He tore the patellar tendon, the medial meniscus, and also the ACL. It was just completely devastating from an injury perspective. But from a game perspective, it really made him reassess how he saw the game and how he saw himself fitting within the NBA. And when he tore his knee, he was on a run where he had been scoring 20 points a game because Paul Pierce had gone down for the season. This was the year right before the Big Three came together. And he said he was going to be the biggest scorer in the world. And then after he came back from that injury, and all of a sudden he's on the best team in the NBA, Doc Rivers basically told him, if you want to fit in on this team and you want to play, you got to be a great defender and you got to do what you do best, bring energy, and even say you got to grind. Eventually, TA came up with grit and grind. But that's what really key things off for Tony. So I talked to Tony talked to me about how that really changed the way that he took care of his body and the way that he saw himself within the framework of the NBA. And, you know, Tony's competitive spirit has been just incredible. He realized after that that he was going to be the best scorer in the NBA. So he became the best defender in the NBA. And very few guys can say that they pull that off. But he was, he was bona fide the best defender in the NBA, at least perimeter on ball defender, just overall perimeter defender in the NBA for like a good 3 to 4 years, and he's still an elite defender. And he talked about that in the context of Kobe Bryant giving him sneakers and dedicating it to him, and like how important Kobe Bryant's you know, well wishes meant to him because Kobe is the greatest competitor he's gone against. You know, and it's Tony talked about the fact that he is probably only going to play another 3 years in the NBA. And it's amazing to think that Tony Allen, who still seems like he's like in his mid-20s to me, is at the tail end of his career. He's turning into more of the godfather than the grindfather now.
Now, getting back to this one, obviously the Celtics struggled a little bit early in this game. They were down at the half, but really turned it on defensively in the third quarter and ran away with this one. Obviously, we love when Gino comes out and Gino time happens. I got to see it at the you know, not too long ago. Last time I went to a game where there was a blowout, so you know, I love being in the building when that happens. But not like it was when KG was there, but it's still a lot of fun. But talk about what the Celtics were able to do out there, particularly in that third quarter. You know, outscoring the Grizzlies 31-12 to take control of this one.
Okay, well, for all you Celtics fans that have been here for more than 4 years, Jarrett Solinger was the only person dancing during Gino's time tonight. So I think it's got to be a little devastating or a real sign of the times there. Because don't forget, only him and Avery Bradley, those are the only guys that actually played on those on that big three team that are still here.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the third quarter, so it was a one-point game with 8 minutes left in the third quarter. And then at the beginning of the fourth quarter, it was a 19-point lead after a Jonas Repko three. The run that they went on in the second half of that third quarter was incredible. And usually when the Celtics go on a big run, Isaiah Thomas is scoring a lot of points. Of course, that's what happened this time. But Jarrett Solinger, you know, the guy with the mysterious skin infection that sounds an awful like he got a staph infection. Pretty much everything in the third quarter. And also, that's just speculation baseless. Yeah, we don't actually know what the issue is, but it definitely sounds like what it sounds like. But Isaiah had just such a monstrous third quarter. They were, you know, they hit so many. I mean, they went 15 for 32 from downtown, hitting 47% of their threes tonight. They haven't shot well from three, it seems like, in forever. I can't remember the last time that they had, you know, 13 to 15 three-pointers in a game. That's pretty huge for them. And they went up against a team that basically held them down and strangled them in the first half. And Brad apparently walked in the locker room at halftime and said something along the lines of, if you guys want to be a real basketball team, show the hell up to this game. And they came out in the third quarter, and they went 11 for 22 from the field. Thomas took half of those shots. He had 16 points in the third quarter. That was pretty much all the damage he needed to do for the entire game. But I really loved what Jarrett Solinger did. He had the first assist he had early in the third quarter, where he slipped a pocket pass between two defenders to Avery Bradley, who was cutting down the baseline. But then he had that pickoff where he picked off a pass and like, caught it in the air with two hands, and then immediately bounced past it to Isaiah Thomas ahead of the break. And then Isaiah went from half court, took four dribbles, and scored. They gave Jarrett Solinger the assist. So I don't think he's getting that one on the road, but
That was like a Vince Wilfork interception in running in for a touchdown. It seemed
really
like he was picking the ball off on the line.
I think Vince could have gotten down court faster than Solinger. Solinger was he was sick, obviously, so it made sense.
Yeah.
But Solinger like, disappeared at some point in the second half, and he came back out. Apparently, he had to like have the dressing redone on his sores on his stomach. But he came back out, and he was eating some food. I'm not sure what he was eating, but it's pretty rare to ever see an NBA player eating on the bench. But he was eating something. I think it was one of those like Gatorade little like mini packets or something like that.
They
have. It's kind of like Clif Bars.
Timmy, I know you had a question for Jared.
Yeah, I did. Hi, Jared. We were just talking when Nick called in, who's Evan Turner's biggest fan, as far as I know. And we were talking about a Celtics blog article earlier in the week talking about whether the Celtics should keep Evan Turner or not. And my question for you was, how important is he in the Celtics locker room? Is he a leader in there, or is he just a presence in there at all?
So that article was written by Bobby Manning, who actually had the pleasure of meeting tonight at the game, coincidentally. Great young man there. Going to Syracuse next year, journalism school. Congratulations.
Oh, wow.
And he'll be doing some work on the CLNS postgame show later this year too, so you'll be hearing his voice more. But That article I disagreed with. Bobby's a nice guy, and he's doing a good job, but I totally disagreed with it there. The only issue with Evan Turner is that the Celtics might get priced out on him, but he's playing like a $10 million man this year. And don't forget, $10 million is like the equivalent of like $6.5 million in last year's money. Like that's going to be just above mid-level with the $98 million or $92 million cap that's expected this year. But he's been probably the best sixth man on this team with, I guess, Marcus Smart alternating in there. I mean, the guy's a legitimate sixth man of your contender. They need a secondary offensive player to run the team when Isaiah Thomas isn't available to do it. And they have relied on him during this hot streak, and he has just come through so well. The guy even hit a three-pointer tonight. He legendarily said earlier this year that you got to always be wary of a 15% three-point shooter. You never know when he might hit a shot. And tonight was one of those nights where he ran a really nice play to find Evan Turner on the weak side elbow for three. And we were like, all right, well, that play was a waste. And he actually drained the three. It was like a huge part of that run that they went on. So,
Is he even shooting 15% now?
I honestly, I haven't checked in a while. I'll check right now.
I think he's 12 for 67. I don't know the percent on that, but I think they said that on the broadcast.
Okay, so, I mean, I'm looking up right now, but I would be shocked if he was above 16%. We'll call it that. Evan can't hit a three, but he's actually pretty good from everywhere else. He's a solid mid-range shooter. And he just, like, every single game, he just makes one play that it's like a play that like, you can't believe he's trying to do. And it works like half the time. Tonight he had a really cool one where he went up in the air, was going to make like a big like kind of up and under shot, and then he got fouled and the guy started flying past him. So he just kind of like held like freeze frame and then took like a little pop-up layup and hit the shot. And it was really impressive. Also, he's actually up to 18% on the season right now. So good for him. He's really turning into a sharpshooter.
But I think, you know, Timmy was talking about you know, him being vocal in the locker room. Do you hear him a lot or even in, you know, in the timeouts on the sidelines or anything? I mean, are you hearing him being vocal with his teammates and really leading out there? You know, I think that's what we were alluding to earlier in talking about Evan Turner and continuing with this team as if he's bringing that leadership that that this team needs as it moves forward with the youth that it has.
No doubt. I mean, he's a class clown. I think everyone's aware of that by now. He's always cracking jokes. He's always being silly. And he is one of the funniest people I've ever talked to in my life. But he's a legitimate leader. He works with guys. He's a good team player. He's a real facilitator. He's finally found the perfect balance of being a facilitator but still being a go-to guy and trying to take this team upon himself. And he's just struck that balance so well over the past 2 months, and that's why he's been playing so well. But he's someone that they really enjoy. And he's the guy that kind of just brings the light attitude in the locker room, but while still working hard and playing seriously. Because, like, that's a really valuable tool in the locker room to have, like, the fun guy that just that kind of puts everybody at ease when things are really tight and competitive. But those guys often can be too detrimental and they can't be serious, stuff like that. I think Evan, at this point, his track record has proven that he's still he doesn't let that get the best of him. And it doesn't get the best of the team just because he's a silly, easygoing guy. He still puts the work in. He still plays really hard. He generally plays smart. He'll do something ridiculous every single game, but only half the time does it hurt the team. I mean, another thing he did today was Isaiah Thomas got the ball on the break and Evan was ahead of him. Evan just like stood there and like set a screen for like nobody as Isaiah Thomas went by him. And then Isaiah just went and drilled the three on the other end, like right off the break. But Evan Turner just like stood there and like set a pick for nobody and just watched the play. It's like he just knew somehow that Isaiah was going to literally run down court and jack up a three. But it was just like one of those like ridiculous, pointless things that Evan Turner does just to make sure he's having fun during the game.
Jared, we were talking earlier about the role players. You know, obviously we had good contributions from the Swedish Larry Bird tonight, Jerebko, as well as Zeller and Smart, obviously. You know, what are your thoughts on what those kind of guys have been bringing to the table, particularly during this run where the Celtics have obviously won 14 games at home and you know, have won significant, games recently? You know, what are these guys bringing to the table that has allowed them to be so successful?
Well, with Jurepko, it's been he really hasn't been consistent hitting the three ball, but I think he's been generally effective this year. But tonight he was great. He had a plus 22, a game high tonight. He went 3-for-4 from deep. I think those were all the shots he took. He's been a good rebounder so far. His defense is all right. They've generally just played better when they have lineups with him at the four because of the way that he stretches the four out. That gives so much room for guys like Isaiah Thomas. And he's pretty good at getting the ball in the corner and being able to take the quick shot or swing it out. He is one of the quickest releases in the NBA. It's something that, I mean, he's always had this, but I've really been noticing it this year. He's now able to catch the ball up at his chest and just bring the ball straight up, like, to his right ear and then fire away. He doesn't, you know, a lot of guys, when they catch the ball, they have to, like, reset their elbows or bring the ball down to their waist and then back up to get their form going. He catches the ball, and like just like Klay Thompson does or Steph Curry does. He catches the ball, puts his hand underneath it, and fires away. His release is just so incredibly fast. That really makes him valuable because teams are so scared that no matter what they do, he's going to get a shot off, and that's going to keep them 4 feet closer to him and 3 feet out, you know, 3 feet out of the lane. And that's what's so crucial about him being out there.
Jared, what can we expect from the Garden Report, which we will all be eagerly anticipating when we wake up in the morning?
We're going to have Josue Pipes Pavone, as my friend calls him. This guy's got the deepest pipe you'll hear, even deeper than mine, I'd say. He's also a good writer and a reporter. He's going to come on the show. He's from WEEI. And we're going to talk about the third quarter, kind of go a little more play-by-play on how the third quarter looks. And then the fact that the Celtics are – they're kind of locking into this third seed here, and unless something goes really wrong or Miami like doesn't lose a game for the rest of the year, they're looking at a good shot at that third seed. So whom are they going to be playing in the playoffs? Hopefully not Detroit. Hopefully it's Chicago, for the sake that I can go visit some family while covering the playoffs. We'll see. But it's amazing to think that they're at the point where they're kind of picking out who are they going to play in the playoffs.
Well, the Heat lost tonight to the Bucks, 114-108. So there's a little help from Milwaukee out there.
So that's 1.5 game lead now in the third seed. Plus the Celtics have the tiebreaker, which is a functional half game value. So they're really two games up on the Heat. So that's a pretty decent lead.
Great stuff as always, Jared Weiss. Follow him over on Twitter at @CLNS_Jared Weiss. Jared, thank you so much for joining us and giving us a great breakdown of this one.
I'm sorry, 15 seconds, I have to say this one on the air. Funny thing that happened during the game, Jeff Green has been traded from the Memphis Grizzlies to the Clippers. That's made room for Jermichael Green to actually shine. There was a guy sitting in the section next to where I was sitting in press row, wearing a Rondo jersey, no undershirt, just got the guns hanging out on the hottest day of the year. And he yells, as Jermichael Green goes to the line, he yells, "Jeff Green, you suck!" And I just thought that was quintessential Boston Masshole fan, doesn't even know who he's looking at. He just thinks it's Jeff Green. I thought that was hilarious.
Suns out, guns out, Jared.
There in their sleeveless shirts. Yeah, good for you guys.
Yeah, suns out, guns out. All right, Jared Weiss, we'll be looking forward to the Garden Report.
Thanks, boys.
All right. Yep. Again, don't forget to follow him on Twitter at @CLNS_Jared Weiss and go to CLNS Radio's YouTube channel, youtube.com/CLNS Radio. For high definition locker room interviews from this game, full length locker room interviews, and of course the Garden Report, the HD post game show shot on the parquet floor at TD Garden. You can subscribe today by going to youtube.com/CLNS. Timmy. So obviously some great information from Jared there. We obviously talked about Amir Johnson and in our thoughts on him, and obviously Solinger coming back. But, I mean, the Memphis Grizzlies are kind of an interesting team here because, they're still kind of hanging around in the Western Conference, in a very difficult Western Conference. Like I said earlier, the injury bug has really hit them, quite a bit. And, for a team that was sort of in that 3-4 spot, they've kind of fallen off now, although they're kind of, steady between Portland and the Clippers, 4 games behind the Clippers, and I don't know if this includes tonight's games or not, but 4.5 ahead of Portland. So it's likely that they're still going to be a playoff team, But, you know, with the injuries, and we don't know how long Chalmers have been out, I did get a chance to ask Jared about the Mario Chalmers injury, if he heard anything on that. But, you know, what are your thoughts on Memphis going forward here from what you've seen from these guys tonight? Obviously, like we said, they got some pretty decent contributions from these guys that had to step up with the injuries. But, you know, obviously everyone expects either Golden State or San Antonio to come out of the West. But, you know, what do you see out of Memphis as they move forward and will likely get a playoff spot?
Well, so, I mean, you pretty much covered the bases there with Memphis. Something interesting that I heard earlier on today was that since Memphis had the 22nd most efficient offense, and since the Marc Gasol injury, who most people would argue is their best player, since Marc Gasol's injury, they've had the 7th most efficient offense. So to me, that's kind of like similar to how the Clippers are playing so well in the absence of Blake Griffin. I'm not sure if it's something that will really help them in the playoffs, but for the time being in the regular season, it is working out for them. But just, I don't think there's any way that they can sustain what they've done so far this season and what they've been doing since Gasol went out. The absence of Mike Conley, who's the numbers don't always show up, but he's a really good point guard. He helps that team a lot.
For a while. Absolutely.
Yeah, he's so consistent and so solid. I don't have his stats up in front of me, but I know that they're not like super sexy stats. But, I mean, I think a lot of people thought it would be very tough for the team without him. But Mario Chalmers, he helped that team a lot when he came there at the beginning of this year. And I think he can fill that starting role, as you saw in Miami. But I think when you total it all up, I think it would have been hard enough for the Grizzlies without Gasol, Connolly, and Randolph. I think the Chalmers and they showed today that they could hang around even without those three guys.
Yeah.
But I think the Chalmers injury is going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back. I wouldn't be surprised to see a pretty bad tailspin out of the Grizzlies provided that those four guys miss time. I think it was kind of an anomaly that JaMychal Green and Jarrell Martin had such strong games. And I think the big part of that, which I mentioned, was that those two guys had such a big first half. And I think the Celtics, when they have a series of days off in a row, I think they come out a little lethargic a lot of times in the first quarter, the first half at times. And they have only two games in a 9-day stretch, and I think that definitely contributed to the way that that some of those guys whose names you don't hear very often played in that first half.
Yeah, I think that with tonight's win, they're actually at 500 in games, so they have 2 days of rest. I'm pretty sure I saw Jared tweet that out earlier tonight. But also to follow up on your Mike Conley point, he's averaging 15.3 points a game, 6.1 assists, and 2.9 rebounds a game. So that's a pretty solid season for him. So obviously
good. He's
missed. Zach Randolph, you know, he's missed. I'm just disappointed that I didn't get to see Birdman play tonight.
I'm not a big Birdman fan.
No, me neither, but I forgot that he was even on the Grizzlies. But the old man, Vince Carter, had 17 points off the bench for the Grizzlies tonight. Hit a couple of threes in that second half there, which didn't really mean much. But I was saying this to my wife earlier, I'm pretty sure Vince Carter is about 57 years old now, but could still hit the three ball.
Oh yeah, he's getting up there for sure. I don't know if this might be his last season or maybe next, but he's still playing well as you saw tonight.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he had to change his game quite a bit, and you know his roles have significantly changed over the last few years. But I mean, you know, this guy. He's 39 years old, so you know he's around my age, only a couple months older than me, which is still funny for me to even imagine, you know, growing up in the 80s NBA with Bird and Magic and Jordan, and obviously in the 90s when guys like Vince Carter and Paul Pierce and Tim Duncan came around, that I'm actually like the same age as these guys that are superstars in the NBA. But that dunk contest that he won, when he was with the Raptors, when he was pretty much hanging his elbow on the rim, you know, I mean, that's exciting stuff, even for a purebred Celtics fan. It was exciting to see guys like him play in his prime. And he's still trying to do it at 39 years old. So regardless of whether or not this is his last year. You know, he could still be fun to watch at times. And, you know, I mean, like you said about Green and Martin, obviously, probably a little bit of an anomaly. And you know, obviously, you know, Jermichael Green had 37 minutes, and I don't know if what he's averaging for minutes. Doesn't show this here in the stats that I'm looking at. But, you know, the fact that he cut 37 minutes tonight probably has a lot to do with the injuries. But also, you know, with the success he was having early, you know, they stuck with him and you know, he contributed pretty well. But, you know, the fact that Martin got his 16 points, I mean, he's averaging 1 point a game this season, 0.3 assists, 2.1 rebounds, shooting about 29%. You know, so this guy isn't getting significant minutes, and he goes out there and is 23 minutes tonight and scores 16 points and also had 6 rebounds on 7 of 10 shooting. So, you know, although you say they might take a slide back a little bit, you know, at least they're kind of seeing what they got at a couple of these other guys. Because, it, like I said, I mean, it's likely that they're not going to, even if they do fall, that they're not going to fall so far that they're going to be out of the playoffs. Because you got teams like, you know, Houston and Dallas who are about 5.5 and 6 games behind. You know, you're probably talking, what, 13, 14 games left for most of these teams. That might be kind of tough to make up. And the Celtics play the Rockets on Friday. So, of course, we'll have you covered on CLNS Radio as well after that one. But, Timmy, before we wrap up here, we have the SeatGeek toll-free call-in still open. So some late stragglers want to call in and talk about this one before we wrap up the show. You can do so at 347-215-7771. And we will take your calls and you can give us your thoughts on this game tonight. And don't forget that tonight's episode is also brought to you by SeatGeek, and our call lines are powered by SeatGeek.com. If you've ever been frustrated trying to buy tickets online, most sites make it complicated, so I'm not surprised. They all try to sneak in huge fees at checkout, and that's why you need to try SeatGeek. They've made it easier than ever to buy and sell sports and concert tickets. They pull all the tickets together available on other sites into one place, so you save time and never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming events, and SeatGeek will let you know if ticket prices fall. The Celtics postgame show listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. So get your $20 rebate on tickets by downloading the free SeatGeek app, going to the settings tab and clicking add a promo code, then enter the promo code CelticsBeat. That's all one word. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase, and download the free SeatGeek app and enter the promo code CelticsBeat. That's one word today by going to SeatGeek.com or to where you consume your apps, either on iTunes or Google Play. So great stuff there. And Timmy, as we wrap up the show here, as I said, the Celtics, you know, play the Houston Rockets on Friday, and, you know, taking a look at their schedule coming up over the next, you know, next week or so. Obviously, as we're getting towards the end of the season, they play Friday, you know, against Houston, and then they don't play again until Tuesday against the Pacers. But then they have back to back. They play Wednesday at home against the Oklahoma City Thunder. So a couple of, you know, tougher games for the Celtics coming up. With the way that they're playing right now, hopefully they'll get Kelly Olynyk back and into the rotation, which means less minutes for Amir Johnson, we're hoping for. What are you hoping to see out of the Celtics over this next stretch as they continue to kind of get everything together and make a run for the playoffs?
Well, I think everybody knew going into March that the Celtics were about to face a gauntlet of teams, a really hard schedule. But the most – and I will get to the question that you asked, but I think something that's super encouraging is the fact that following the win against the Bucks on February 25th, I think that was when a lot of people were saying, this is when the gauntlet starts. We're about to play Miami, Utah, Portland, New York, at Cleveland, and Memphis. And I think that was when a lot of people said, this stretch is going to start. If we can go 500 over this stretch, I'll be pretty happy. And we won 5 out of those 6 games, as you know. So not saying that I'll be okay with them losing any of the next games, but just saying I think that they've already exceeded expectations for this hard stretch of games. And the only games that I really look at on the schedule and I say I don't think we have a very good chance of winning is the two Toronto games on March 18th and March 23rd. I mean, Oklahoma City is the other one that obviously jumps out, but as good as Oklahoma City are and as stacked as they are, we already beat them in Oklahoma this year, so there might be a little mental aspect for Oklahoma City. And on top of that, Oklahoma City has looked really not super great over the last few weeks. I think they're either tied or very close with the Clippers right now in the third quarter. They're playing them right now, and they're also very close in the standings. But I mean, they've blown two big games. They blew a large lead against the Clippers over the last weekend, and then the Golden State game last Thursday, I think it was. They also lost their lead in that. So I don't think that that's an unbeatable team by any means. I think Toronto's the scariest team on the schedule coming up.
Yeah, and the first one next Friday night is in Toronto too. So obviously the way Toronto's been playing, you know, it looked like they were kind of coming back to earth for a little bit there, maybe two or three game stretch, but they're right back, with a 4.5 game lead over the Celtics. So if the Celtics can make some headway in these next three games and in really get it together for those games, they're not going to be easy, I know. But, the way they've been playing against the upper echelons, like the Clevelands for three and a half quarters, like they played in the last few weeks, particularly the way they've been playing at home. I mean, obviously that first game in Toronto is going to be tough, but coming back home, hopefully they can, maybe take a split of those two games with Toronto. Maybe they inch closer to that second seed. I think, 4.5 game lead, even with, what is it? They have 65 games that they played, so they got 17 games left. I was a little ahead of myself when I said 13 or 14 earlier. So the Celtics, actually, I don't know if this includes tonight's game. So again, I don't know if this is updated, but 16, 17 games, 4.5 games might be tough to make up the way Toronto's playing. But if you can take a chunk out of them in one of those games, or if not both, then you're getting into April, closer to the end of the March in April, when you're really starting to get ready for the playoffs with a little bit of confidence against a playoff caliber team, and certainly that's gonna help them going forward, especially a team that's in their division, in their conference that they're going after. But Toronto is really playing great basketball pretty much the whole season. Like I said, they've had very few stretches where they've kind of dropped down a little bit, but for the most part, they've been one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference right there. Record-wise, they're only two games behind Cleveland, according to this standings that I'm looking at. Like I said, I don't know if that includes any games tonight yet or not, but it's going to be very interesting this last month of the season, particularly in that Eastern Conference. I mean, out West, it's pretty much Golden State and then San Antonio and then everyone else. But in the East, there's a lot for these teams to play for, and obviously seeding in the top eight, and then we're still interested in seeing what happens with the bottom of the league, with Brooklyn, having the second worst record now in the Eastern Conference, maybe they'll get a little bit closer to Phoenix and the Lakers to make that to sneak back into that top three with the Brooklyn pick. Obviously a great stretch of games for the Celtics. And if they're at home, hopefully they keep winning because, the way they're playing at home right now, Timmy, you want to be at every single game. Like I said, I went to that Utah game. It was like a playoff atmosphere in there. I imagine it was the same with you at the Portland game, even though it was kind of a blowout at the end. But it's exciting to be at the Garden. CLNS Radio will obviously have you covered through the entire rest of the season and into the playoffs. We're really looking forward to another playoff run with the Celtics that we're covering. Jared Weiss will be in the locker room at TD Garden for the home games. Larry H. Russell will have the pregame shows before every single game up on clnsradio.com at 4 p.m. And then, of course, our great staff of writers will be covering every inch of this team up and down. And don't forget, the great Celtic Stuff Live podcast as well as the Celtics Beat podcast. So you have no way not to get as much information as possible about the Celtics right here from CLNS Radio. So as we wrap up here, Timmy, I don't know if you have any final thoughts on this one, but great win for the Celtics tonight, 116-96 over the Memphis Grizzlies.
This is not about the game specifically, but I do just want to double up on your comment about how great the Garden has been this year. I went to one playoff game against Cleveland last year, and I think I've been to three regular season games this year, and I think that the atmosphere at those three regular season games has been superior to that of the playoff game last year. I think there's just totally a buzz around the team right now, and people have obviously taken notice. And even a Wednesday night game is like you said, it's like a playoff atmosphere in there. People are definitely catching on to how special and energetic this current Celtics team is. And I think the Garden's going to be a pretty tough place to play come playoff time, just the same way, maybe not the same way, but close to what it was back in 2007 and 2008.
Yeah, I mean, that jungle atmosphere, again, will be great to be around. The Utah game was a Monday night game. So Monday night at the Garden, the crowd kind of was late arriving, before it really got going. And Utah was, got off to a double-digit lead early in the first quarter. So people were kind of out of it. And then all of a sudden, the second unit comes in and just gets the team right back in the game. And all of a sudden, the whole place is rocking. And it was like that for the rest of the night. Obviously, that was a close game that the Celtics won at the end with a great block by Avery Bradley and three-pointer by Jay Crowder. Who we didn't even talk about that much tonight, but another guy that I love that's been playing well overall for this team. I've said this before in this show, and I'll say it again. If you're not on the Celtics bandwagon, you better hop on right now, because we might not even let you on right now. But if you're not on it, get on it, because this team is exciting to watch. And, even if they're going to go to the Eastern Conference Finals and get swept by the Cavaliers or – only make it to the second round. It's just going to be exciting for a team, coached by Brad Stevens that works their butt off on both ends of the floor and, is disrespected for not having a superstar in this team and, really has a chip on his shoulder. They're going to be really fun to watch in this last month of the season and into the playoffs. So it's going to be exciting for all of us that are covering this team.
Absolutely, yeah. I can't wait to see how it plays out over the next, from now until hopefully June.
Hopefully June, yeah. I'd love it. Hey, why don't you let the listeners know where they can follow you on social media, Timmy, and obviously the great things that you're doing.
All right, well, I can be followed at tsclafani20, and you can read my posts at hardwoodhoudini.com and also the occasional post at coffeeandbasketball.wordpress.com.
Fantastic. Okay, well, again, we'll be covering the game after Celtics-Rockets on Friday night. Stay tuned for who your host will be on the post-game show. Of course, as I said, LHR will have the pregame show up by around 4 o'clock, and we'll go across enemy lines with probably somebody from the Houston Rockets beat, if possible. So stay tuned for that one at clnsradio.com and on the CLNS Radio app. Make sure you download that in the App Store today. But thank you so much for joining us on the CLNS Radio Celtics postgame show. For my co-host, Tim Lee Scaflani, this is Sean Backey. You can follow me at CLNS_Sean. We'll catch you next time on the CLNS Radio Celtics postgame show.